It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Cruz humbles Trump. Rubio surges, defying the pollsters. And Clinton ekes out a victory over Sanders in the closest Democratic Iowa caucus in history. This hour, we want to reflect on the caucus season with three Iowa journalists who've been living and breathing it for months. They are in our Des Moines studio. Kay Henderson of Radio Iowa with us. Good morning. Good afternoon to you.
After.
I don't know what time it is. We were up late last night.
Kay,
who knows? We're all in kind of zombie land a little bit. Kay Henderson, thank you for, despite the sleep deprivation, coming into our studio as well. Thank you, Kathy Obradovich of the Des Moines Register, for coming in.
Glad to be here. You know, my greatest fear was that we would wake up on Groundhog Day and find that it was caucus day all over again. So I was really glad, you know, to find that it was actually February 2nd.
Clay Masters with us as well, someone who's used to getting up early, not so used to staying up so late. Clay, hi to you.
Hello. Rolling up the sleeping bag right now.
All right. And listeners, we want to hear from you. Perhaps you're rolling up a sleeping bag after a late caucus night as well. River to River listeners, what will you remember most from this caucus season and your caucus experience last night? We want to hear if anything strange happened. Perhaps there was a surprise for you. Perhaps it was your first time participating in a caucus. Was it what you were expecting? 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or find Iowa Public Radio on Facebook to leave your comment or your caucus reflection or experience. Well, sleep-deprived but exhilarated from the afterglow of a very exciting caucus season, a season that defied pundits. It also held surprises right up to and including last night. Let's go around the horn and see if we can get your initial reaction. We want to hear, we'll hear each of the candidates in the winning categories in their own words in just a few minutes. But I'd like to go around and just get your reaction to the results in the context of this season. Kathy Obradovich, would you start us off?
Okay, well, I would start off with saying that Ted Cruz, I think, validated the Iowa caucus way, the retail politics, doing the full Grassley, rounding up all the evangelicals and getting them out to vote and, you know, going around and saying, don't just come to the caucuses, bring nine of your friends. And I think his success in doing that up against Donald Trump, who was flying in his private jet and parachuting in and riding in his helicopter at the state fair and doing all of this really media savvy and friendly type of stuff, that it was still the shoe leather and the hard slog across Iowa that won out. And I think that's good for the caucus.
So those big events were perhaps entertainment for a lot of people to come out to, but it didn't lock people down.
Yeah, I don't think that, you know, probably movie theaters in some of these small towns saw their receipts go down because Donald Trump was the biggest show in town.
Kay Henderson, what are your thoughts about last night?
Well, in some respects, it's a little bit hard to process the results since we just got them 15 minutes ago from the Iowa Democrats. They finally reported 100% of precincts at 11:45 a.m. the day after the caucuses.
Amazing.
And so I think the happiest people in Iowa right now are the Republicans who messed up the caucus reporting on 2012 because
everything worked.
This is going to be a headache for Democrats
right.
for a long time because the Sanders people are conflabbing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's a word, but I just made it up. Do you like that, Clay?
Yeah.
They're conflabbing right now, and Sanders may ask for a release of the raw vote totals of the Democratic contest. So that would be entertaining if, for the first time ever, Democrats decided to do that.
I bet they won't.
Exactly. And I mean, you know, it also required journalists. And, you know, frankly, we became journalists because I did not. I can't speak for my colleagues here, but I didn't want to become a mathematician. But I did some math just moments ago and discovered that Clinton's victory is by a margin of 3.77 delegates.
Wow.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
That is amazing. Clay Masters, jump in here.
For weeks, we've been talking about momentum versus organization and whose momentum was going to pay off and whose organization was going to pay off. On the Democratic side, we had Hillary Clinton, who has been organizing here for years, you know, through the I'm Ready for Hillary PAC and then her campaign when she started making these small early visits back in March and April or whenever that was. And then you had Bernie Sanders, who I still remember when Sanders was announcing that he was running for president. And he was standing outside of the Capitol saying, I got to get back in there and count some, you know, I got to go out in there and vote. And he just seemed like such a fringe candidate. And now here we are looking back on yesterday's events, and it's just so close. And that's just such an amazing thing to see how things have played out. And then if you look at the Republican side, we were talking about the momentum of Donald Trump and the organization of Ted Cruz and the momentum of Donald Trump were these big rallies. It was like a rock concert. It was a news item that he was staying in a hotel. And it was all about those first-time voters, but it didn't pay off compared to the old-school full Grassley, as it's been penned.
Clay Masters with us, Kathy Obradovich and Kay Henderson, chewing over the caucus results in the context of a very long caucus season. We hope you'll join us, 1-866-780-9100. We'll go to callers and some social media a little bit later, but let's focus a little bit more in first on the Democrats' contest there. Let's hear from Hillary Clinton last night. Here she is, the former Secretary of State, in part of her speech to supporters last night in Des Moines.
It is rare that we have the opportunity we do now to have a real contest of ideas, to really think hard about what the Democratic Party stands for and what we want the future of our country to look like if we do our part to build it. I am a progressive who gets things done for people. I am honored to stand in the long line of American reformers who make up our minds that the status quo is not good enough, that standing still is not an option, and that brings people together to find ways forward that will improve the lives of Americans.
Hillary Clinton last night in Des Moines speaking to supporters. Kathy, I wonder, what are your observations about how Hillary Clinton has cast herself and perhaps slightly shifted the way she's cast herself as the challenge from Bernie Sanders became greater?
She said, I am a progressive who gets things done. And I think that really sums it up, that she adopted some of Bernie Sanders' progressive agenda, including really increasing her proposals for dealing with income inequality, dealing with issues of going after Wall Street and regulating there. And yet she tried to cast herself against Bernie Sanders as somebody who is more realistic, whose agenda has more of a chance in the real world where, you know, Congress is gridlocked and nothing ever gets done, that somehow her ideas are actually going to be more realistic. And, you can take that with a grain of salt, because I think, you know, any politician's ideas these days, you have to really question whether they're realistic.
Mm-hmm. Let me chime in here. One of the interesting things about her speech last night, which we didn't just hear, was the part about where she embraced with both arms and a big, big, big hug universal health care. And our reporter who was on the scene at the Sanders event said the crowd was shocked because obviously, as everybody knows, these crowds at these caucus night events are, you know, glued to CNN, or if it's a Republican event, they're glued to the Fox News. When they heard her say that, there were actually gasps among the Sanders supporters that, you know, she was embracing the thing that has sort of separated the two of them, where she's been out in the past month saying, you know, we can't tear up the Affordable Care Act. And there she is on caucus night saying, hey, let's go do this.
Mm. So do you think she, Kay, will be successful in this bit of morphing?
I think we really don't know what the results of the Iowa caucuses truly mean until those New Hampshire contrarians cast ballots in their primary.
But this is Kathy, Ben. And, you know, one of the things that people liked about Bernie Sanders and worried about Hillary Clinton was that she's too willing to adopt positions that are politically expedient. And, you know, they questioned, for example, coming late to opposition for the Trans-Pacific Partnership, you know, coming late to opposition for the Keystone Pipeline. And now here she is coming late to the idea that universal health care isn't unrealistic after all. That makes her look like more of a politician, and Bernie, who has his agenda hasn't changed since the beginning of time, you know, looks like somebody who is more reliable.
Let's reach out to our listeners. We've had lots of people on the phone who had caucus experiences. Claire is joining us from West Des Moines. Claire, you were out at a caucus site?
I was. I was in West Des Moines 315, and we had four delegates for Clinton and three for Sanders, and our undecided and O'Malley group was not viable, but we had a wonderful caucus. I can't even tell you how nice it was just to have a room full of Democrats that were just cooperative, and we actually had a really good time.
So who did you caucus for, Claire, if I may ask? Who did you caucus for?
I was the precinct chair for Hillary Clinton, and it was an enjoyable thing to do. Mm-hmm. And we organized hard here in West Des Moines. I must say our field organizers just worked their tails off, and it was much different experience than 2008, much better, much more organized. We had trainings and a lot more dialogue.
When you compare it with 2008, if you were in on 2008, as you just said, so what was the better part of it? How did Hillary lasso the support that she didn't capture or that was pulled away from her by Obama in 2008?
I think it was just the number of field organizers. There were more of them. They were more engaged. They were more they communicated with us a lot more. A lot more in-person communication, a lot more in-home training. We had neighborhood gatherings, a lot of phone calling, a lot more door knocking than I remember in 2008. I think that was probably what did it. We had some door knockers that literally just went door to door for months on end, and they were troopers.
Okay. We also thank you very much, Claire in West Des Moines, for giving us your perspective on caucus night one.
You bet.
866-780-9100. Lots of stories here. I don't know where were you, Clay, last night? We talked, and I can't even remember. You were at a Republican site in Des Moines, weren't you?
It's like you don't even care, Ben.
Or that I'm sleep-deprived as well.
I was at a Republican caucus at the State Historical Society in downtown Des Moines, and it was a packed room. It got started late. You know, you hear political journalists say this over and over again, but Republicans do things differently than Democrats do. They hear from the candidate surrogates, and then they write who they support down on a little piece of paper. And most of the people that I had talked to there were either undecided, they had it down to a short list, or there were some of these first-time Trump voters in the flesh. And when it came to fruition, Marco Rubio, the Florida senator, won with 88 votes, and Trump came in second with 37. There were 208 people casting ballots, and it was surprising to me after having all these weeks, and this was just one slice, but to have Rubio doing so successfully. And if I'm remembering right, Polk County, Story County, and Dallas County, all in the Des Moines area, Marco Rubio had a pretty great night in those counties.
He
right around Des Moines.
Spent a lot of time here.
He did spend, especially up there in Ankeny,
exactly.
Right?
This is a real thing. We had when I look at the latest last Iowa poll released just on Saturday, we had Rubio only at 15%. Trump ahead of Cruz. Rubio only at 15%. He came out with 3% when all done and tallied. How do any of you explain the difference here? That's quite a jump from a reliable poll, the Iowa poll, to the results.
Well, you know, the poll is only reliable to the point where you stop polling. This is Kathy, and since it was the Register's poll, I'll defend it. You have in a caucus, however, you had a lot of people making up their minds in the final days of this campaign. We were out of the field on Friday night, and people had all weekend to tune in and think about it and talk to their friends and, you know, have people, you know, put the thumb on them to get them to go to the caucuses. And so I think that there was a lot of that that went on. And Marco Rubio was a little bit better organized than people gave him credit for. I think Donald Trump was a little less organized than people were giving him credit for. And so some of that stuff all comes together in the final days. And also, I think there were some people who made up their minds on caucus night based on how well the speaker at the caucus, you know, persuaded them.
There there was one woman who told me that she was leaning towards Marcus Rubio, which was my favorite quote of the night.
The other thing, I mean, Kathy brings up a really interesting and valid point in that it really mattered who the last person that these people heard speak for the candidate, because when it came right down to it, they didn't hear from the candidate last. They heard from one of their neighbors. Mm-hmm. And if it's, you know, somebody who's flaky, somebody who, as Chuck Todd told me, I was having a conversation with Chuck Todd. He's like, okay, so if this is a guy that, you know, walks the dog and doesn't pick up the poop, I may not say, hey, I'm not going to vote for that guy.
Okay, so
because you know, if the
grassroots,
exactly, literal grassroots, there.
Grassroots.
Thanks
and some,
for taking it there, dude.
Some strange things in the grass there too.
This will be forever known as the dog poop theory.
Exactly.
Let's go back to the Democratic contest. We said just minutes ago, actually declared 100%, just a squeaker for Hillary Clinton. Here's Bernie Sanders last night, the Vermont senator, talking to supporters last night, sounding very triumphant.
Iowa, thank you. Nine months ago, we came to this beautiful state. We had no political organization. We had no money. We had no name recognition. And we were taking on the most powerful political organization in the United States of America. And tonight, while the results are still not known, it looks like we are in a virtual tie. Still not complete. It looks like we'll have about half of the Iowa delegates.
Okay, Bernie Sanders speaking to supporters last night. Very triumphant. I understand this is your colleague, Kathy, reporting there, Jason Noble, that in a handful of Democratic caucus precincts, a delegate was awarded with a coin toss?
It doesn't get any closer than that, Ben. Mm-hmm. And this is part of the Democratic Party rules, from what I understand. And that, you know, this is the kind of thing that makes people around the country go, what?
Exactly.
What?
Exactly.
Coin flips. But, you know, when you understand that you're not counting the raw vote, you're awarding delegates, and you can't split a delegate in half. I know that the equivalents are reported with decimal points, but, you know, you have to get a whole person. And so that is a fair way to do it. Of course, it was reported there were six different coin flips, and Hillary Clinton had the amazing luck to win every single one of them. So I'm sure that there will be more questions about this in the process and how that all works. And all of those things come under a very powerful magnifying glass when the results are as close as they were.
Bernie Sanders now moves on to a state, New Hampshire, where he has a wide lead in the polls. And so it looks like Hillary and Bernie Sanders will be in for a long haul, right down to the convention, perhaps. What are your thoughts?
Well, I'm going to the convention.
Okay.
and it may be an entertaining process. One of the things that occurs to me that is different from 2008 is Hillary Clinton has a template for organizing in a caucus state that she can replicate elsewhere. For example, our neighbors to the north up in Minnesota have a caucus on March 1st. And so if this is a contest still on March 1st, you know, that she has a template for what it takes to organize in a caucus state in a way that she didn't in 2008, because her campaign really was looking at primaries as the way as her route to the nomination.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk to Maggie in Des Moines. Maggie dialed 1-866-780-9100. You were out caucusing last night, Maggie?
Yes, I was, and I'm an octogenarian. And I totally enjoyed going. I've been doing this since the very beginning. 1972 is when it started. I lived in Urbandale, and I went to Gene Needle's house. About under a dozen of us. He has retired now, being Judge Gene Needles. Anyway, in 76, I watched when Carter walked across the state. So I've gone regularly to always the presidential ones, and I've been a delegate. This has been a delegate all the way up to the state level several times. But this has been the most exciting year.
Uh-huh.
And the biggest turnout. We had lines of young people waiting to register, and there weren't even Democratic Party hadn't sent enough registration forms, so they had to use the backs of slips of paper, but they stood in line, they stood their ground. So it was very exciting this year.
Oh, Maggie, may I ask who you caucused for?
I caucused for Bernie Sanders, and I'm so glad to have lived long enough to be able to caucus for this fabulously honest man who had the courage to tell us, to tell the country that there's too much involvement with big money in our democracy now. I really am overwhelmed with joy.
Maggie, thank you for sharing your caucus experience and your feelings. Maggie of Des Moines will have more callers on in our second half. We heard reports of a nationally known Iowa singer-songwriter Dave Moore performing at a precinct in Iowa City while he was caucusing, rallying support for Bernie Sanders as well. Here he is performing an original song. We'll be back in just a moment with more from Kay Henderson, Clay Masters, and Kathy Obradovich. Here is an original song by nationally known Iowa singer-songwriter Dave Moore that he wrote and dedicated to Bernie Sanders. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News, back in just a few minutes.
He said, maybe, just maybe, with these billionaires, enough is enough. And I was feeling the burn. I was feeling the burn. Maybe, just maybe, enough already. Baby, I'm feeling the burn. All across this country, filling up the prison cells. Some of those kids, they haven't done shit, but they're living in a living hell. Bernie says it's time to say the real crime is how it's heavy on the black and brown. Man, he sounds like a country preacher. Try to tear that building down. Have a feeling to burn. And I'm feeling the burn. Maybe, just maybe, enough already. Maybe I'm feeling the burn.
And we're back midstream in this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. The day after the 2016 caucuses, and we're chewing over the results. Surprises last night, as have been throughout the entire campaign season. Here to lend their insights, Kathy Obradovich, political columnist for the Des Moines Register, Kay Henderson, news director of Radio Iowa, and Clay Masters, Iowa Public Radio's Morning Edition host, of course, and a reporter out covering the caucuses. And we want to talk a little bit more about the Republicans this half, since we dedicated quite a bit of time to the Democrats in the first half. Let's listen to a little bit of the speech of Texas Senator Ted Cruz. He came out on top last night, and 28% nearly over Trump with 24%, Marco Rubio with 23%. Here's a bit of Ted Cruz's speech to supporters last night in Des Moines.
When the Washington lobby has settled on other candidates in this race, when the media in one voice said a conservative cannot win, nationwide, over 800,000 contributions poured in to TedCruz.org as courageous conservatives said, yes, we can. 800,000 contributions at tedcruz.org with an average contribution of $67. That is the power of the grassroots. But it's more than that. It's 12,000 volunteers here in the state of Iowa. It's over 200,000 volunteers all across this great nation.
Ted Cruz from last night in Des Moines. Let's go to Jim in Dubuque. He's a listener calling in. Jim, I see on my screen you caucused for the Republicans in Dubuque. Did you land with Ted Cruz or some other candidate?
I went with Ted Cruz.
Mm-hmm. Why did you land with him?
It was a toss-up between Cruz and Rubio. I went with Cruz because I just don't think Rubio has enough experience. I think they both would make excellent presidents, but we've had 8 years of an amateur now, and I'd rather get someone with some experience.
Okay. So did you make your mind up right on site at the caucus and through discussions with fellow Republicans?
It was pretty much on site, but not through discussions. There wasn't enough time really to do discussions. Everything was running really late, and by the time we split up into our separate precincts, people just wanted to vote and get home.
Okay. Jim, thanks for giving us a snapshot of your caucus experience in Dubuque. 1-866-780-9100. So let's talk a little bit about Senator Cruz, of course, capturing a lot of the evangelical vote, we assume, here in Iowa. According to polls, that was the case. Kay Henderson, what are your thoughts about how Cruz carries his campaign forward into New Hampshire with many fewer evangelicals and on into other states?
Well, Cruz himself is articulating this message that, unlike past caucus winners, conservatives Mike Huckabee in 2008 and Rick Santorum in 2012, he has something different: money. He has a lot of money. He mentioned that in the soundbite that your listeners just heard. It will propel him in a way that the other two were unable to capitalize on their caucus victories. And South Carolina is, you know, right up there after New Hampshire. So he's hoping to capitalize in South Carolina. And it was important for him to finish ahead of Donald Trump here, because as the Donald said lots of times in Iowa, if he had won Iowa, he was going to run the table.
And another thing that this Ted Cruz victory demonstrates is that this kind of solidifies that argument that you can come to Iowa now and just use it as a stage. You don't have to pander to Iowa issues. We're talking, of course, about ethanol, the renewable fuel standard. Terry Branstad does not endorse candidates, but he was pretty critical of Ted Cruz's stance on the renewable fuel standard and ethanol. And now he took Iowa. He won Iowa. He also had the backing of Bob Vanderplaats, the Christian conservative evangelical of the family leader, and Steve King. Steve King looked almost more excited than Ted Cruz on that stage last night. And it's really showing just how the party here in Iowa is even kind of broken into different pieces.
This issue sort of set up a feud between Congressman King and Terry Branstad over this ethanol issue. Congressman King was incensed by Governor Branstad's comments about Ted Cruz and his positions against renewable fuel mandates. Of course, he's also against oil subsidies and mandates as well. But, and also the renewable fuel industry spent buku dollars. I think I got mailers sometimes more than one every day.
Yeah.
You know, I could probably I could probably re-wallpaper my kitchen.
There are these oversized mailers that kind of they had to cram into your mailbox.
Yeah, exactly. And so I was concerned about what Governor Branstad said, because I think there's a problem for Iowa going into the future of the caucuses if it continues to be seen as a state where you have to come in and kiss the ring of King Corn in order to be a candidate. John McCain, for example, decided not to campaign here in 2000 because of that. And, it might keep some candidates in the future, including conservatives who otherwise would do well in Iowa, out of Iowa. So it didn't keep Cruz out. It didn't keep him from winning.
And we found this soundbite. I did a piece about ethanol back in October, and we looked through the NPR library and found a debate between George W. Bush and John McCain, and they were talking about ethanol, and W. said something to the extent of, I'd support ethanol no matter where I was. I'll do it in Iowa. I'll do it. And the crowd just erupted like they were seeing a rock star. Like ethanol was such an amazing thing. And it's so interesting now that we're 15 years later, 16 years later, and it's not as big of a rock star now.
Well, and I also think this shows that, you know, it's not your father's Oldsmobile. Is that the is
right.
that this party is not Terry Branstad's party? If you look at the winners,
mm-hmm.
This shows the, you know, divide between the evangelicals and Branstad in a way that I think will be instructive as we head into an election season in the future when Branstad's trying to anoint his lieutenant governor as the governor in waiting. I think this shows that evangelicals may not do Terry Branstad's bidding.
Mm-hmm. Kay Henderson with us of Radio Iowa, Kathy Obradovich of the Des Moines Register, and Clay Masters of Iowa Public Radio. A few more minutes to chew over the results from last night's caucuses. Let's listen to, well, we could only use the word loser. Last night, one of the losers, certainly billionaire businessman Donald Trump, striking a different tone while speaking to his supporters last night, coming in a second to Ted Cruz.
On June 16th, when we started this journey, there were 17 candidates. I was told by everybody, do not go to Iowa. You could never finish even in the top 10. And I said, but I have friends in Iowa. I know a lot of people in Iowa. I think they'll really like me. Let's give it a shot. They said, don't do it. I said, I have to do it. And we finished second. And I want to tell you something. I'm just honored. I'm really honored.
Okay. Donald Trump sounding, well, low energy, to use perhaps his description. I don't know. We knew organization, didn't we, was going to be key for Donald Trump. Huge turnouts last night across the state. He didn't get as many of the folks he wanted to show up and have support for him. What are your thoughts on where Donald goes from here as we move to New Hampshire, South Carolina, and beyond?
Well, this is Kathy, and humble does not sound very good on Donald Trump. His whole campaign image and his persona is built around being a winner. I mean, that is why he talked incessantly about the polls all the time. And in fact, sort of had a mini meltdown in Iowa when he got behind for a little while in the polls. How stupid are the people of Iowa? And I was kind of watching last night wondering if that was the Donald Trump we were going to see,
yeah.
You know, immediately start
right.
pouncing on Iowa. Instead, he was humble and, you know, going on. And but, you know, he is also leading in New Hampshire and he's leading in national polls. And, you know, this Iowa, this may just be a little speed bump for him.
The other thing it may show is that this is a guy who's serious about running for president because he realizes that Iowa is a swing state in the general election. So the last thing you want to do is sort of leave the state with, you know, an image that I won't articulate. But I mean, don't lay an egg, or I guess we've mentioned
sour grapes.
Sour grapes. We don't want. Yeah, exactly. We don't want to offend the people who may determine whether I'm the next president of the United States as I'm leaving on my jumbo jet.
But Donald Trump doesn't care about offending people. He's not politically correct. And again, you know, that sort of thing is sort of running against the grain of people who don't like politicians and don't want to see. That's what they like about Donald Trump, that he doesn't speak like a politician.
The other thing about it was, you know, the entrance poll showed that he was ahead. So you wonder if there were some Trump people who went into that room and thought, maybe on second thought, I don't want to vote for this guy.
Well, we got to see a debate without Donald Trump, and it really made us see the race in different eyes. And, you know, it's interesting to think about what the results would have been had Donald Trump not been running and who that would have been good for, probably good for Ted Cruz. I went to a lot of Trump rallies where people were split on either wanting to vote for Cruz or for Trump, and maybe a good thing for Marco Rubio, because it seems like we're talking about the two big winners on the Republican side are first and third.
Right, right. Rubio coming in a very nipping at Donald Trump's heels.
He almost had him.
Donald Trump just over 24% of the support last night. Marco Rubio at 23%. Let's listen to Marco Rubio in third place, considered a winner last night, though. Florida Senator Marco Rubio contrasting with Donald Trump sounding jubilant last night after greatly exceeding expectations.
For months they told us because we didn't have the right endorsements or the right political connections, we had no chance. They told me that we have no chance because my hair wasn't gray enough and my boots were too high. They told me I needed to wait my turn, that I needed to wait in line. But tonight here in Iowa, the people of this great state have sent a very clear message. After 7 years of Barack Obama, we are not waiting any longer to take our country back.
Marco Rubio last night in Des Moines seems to be a narrative that has plagued Rubio's. His reference to it in the first part, his campaign up till last night. Too young, inexperienced for this. Has he proved them wrong, Kay Henderson?
He did certainly pick up support, I think, in the room when people were evaluating, okay, I have three favorites. Which guy am I going to support? It also sort of was interesting in that the most recent election here in Iowa Republicans were sort of conditioned with the Joni Ernst campaign and the people who supported her not to like somebody who doesn't, show up for congressional hearings. And here's a guy who's openly saying, hey, I'm done with that Senate thing. I'm running for president. I'm not, who cares if I vote? My vote really doesn't count in the Senate. I want to be president of the United States. That did not resonate whatsoever. And it also, in retrospect, we had this really weird thing about all of our top elected officials in Iowa. You had Governor Branstad, who was, anti-endorsing somebody. You had Joni Ernst, who was, sort of hugging somebody really close and saying, oh, gosh, I really like this Marco Rubio, but I'm not endorsing him, wink, wink. And then you had Chuck Grassley, who I found, if I had to say what the most entertaining part of this caucus was, it was listening to Chuck Grassley speak to each of the groups that were out there, the Trump supporters in Pella. I heard him speak to Marco Rubio supporters on Sunday night here in Des Moines. And I mean, here is a guy who is seeing these massive crowds and all of this energy for these presidential candidates. He's like, hey, guys, I'm running. Please vote for me.
I wonder. So when we talk about Marco Rubio coming out of Iowa, is he the establishment candidate moving forward, Kathy?
Well, he does have establishment support. He also had support from conservatives, and he does speak to conservative values and issues. But he, I think that his main juice, behind his campaign is people who were looking at Jeb Bush and Chris Christie and John Kasich and other sort of middle of the road or at least not quite as conservative governors and saying, well, these guys have no chance. So who's the closest? And it would be Marco Rubio. Also, I think Marco Rubio gained a lot of credibility despite his lack of experience in the Senate by being probably one of the most articulate candidates on foreign affairs and military issues. The ISIS attacks on Paris and San Bernardino, I think helped Marco Rubio because he has Senate experience with those issues and was able, I think, to be an articulate spokesperson for those.
Okay, we have just about 5 minutes left. I want to get one more caller on the line and have some concluding thoughts from our guests, Kathy, Kay, and Clay. But let's go to Brandon. Brandon on the road. Brandon, you experienced the Iowa caucuses. I understand you're not an Iowan. Brandon, are you there? Brandon, not there. Let's go right to some of your reflections. How about a little reporter's notebook round table here? Looking back on this very long caucus season, share a significant moment or two that perhaps didn't make it into any of your writing or any of your reports, conversation, an event that you attended, a moment that you experienced covering that puts it into perspective or points out something different about this caucus season. May I go to you first of all, Kay?
Gosh, put me on the spot here. I think one of the interesting things to me was the choices that the Cruz campaign made in the closing days of this campaign. They went to places like Wilton, Iowa, and mm-hmm. Hubbard. That was really smart, because one of the things that people noted about Mike Huckabee's surprising victory in 2008 and the Santorum victory in 2012 was, if you're the last candidate to talk to somebody, it may wind up being that they will support you. And so he was out in the types of communities he needed to be in to seal the deal. And so I think that was a really important thing in the close down of this campaign cycle.
Kathy, what do you like to share?
Well, we had an interesting relationship with Donald Trump during this campaign, to say the least. The Des Moines Register upset the Donald back in July by the editorial board wrote an editorial just inviting him to drop out of the race after that whole dust up about John McCain and prisoners of war. And so the Donald Trump campaign invited all of the Des Moines Register reporters to drop dead, essentially, and wouldn't give us media credentials for the events. However, there was a softening in the Donald's position after I got the chance to be part of one of the Democratic debates that was here in Des Moines. And his very next visit, I had signed up for media credentials. And not only was I allowed in, but Donald gave me 15 minutes of his time, mm-hmm. On his own initiative. And I thought, wow, this really tells you a lot about how he looks at things. He didn't want to really talk to the Des Moines Register, but he'd seen me on TV. Therefore, I was worth talking to there for a few minutes.
Well, a standout for sound bites as well. Let's listen to one of Donald Trump's stranger sound bites before we close here. This is during a rally in Fort Dodge back in November. If we remember Ben Carson there up in the polls, and Ben Carson sharing the story of stabbing a friend, but that friend being saved by a belt buckle. Here's Donald Trump on stage before a crowd in Fort Dodge, briefly mimicking Carson's alleged stabbing incident.
He lunged that knife into the stomach of his friends, but lo and behold, it hit the belt. It hit the belt, and the knife broke. Give me a break. Give me a break. Give me a break. The knife broke. And he plunged it into the belt. And amazingly, the belt stayed totally flat. And the knife broke. How stupid are the people of Iowa? How stupid are the people of the country to believe this crap?
Okay, that's an older November clip of Donald Trump. We'll watch where his campaign goes from here. Some concluding thoughts from you, Clay Masters, as you continue to cover this season off into the months ahead.
Yeah, the most interesting thing for me just had been accompanying a lot of the volunteers as they knocked doors, especially the Hillary Clinton campaign, to see how many times these people have visited homes. There was one person that I was with who had said that he had been working on the wife and, he'd only talked to her one other time because of dogs that were at the door. And the time I was with him, the husband actually came out and talked to him and said, yeah, I'm leaning there. And so just the amount that the pressure that they were trying to put on these different doors and these different houses. And also with the Sanders campaign, to have caught up so much, they had not been organizing for that time. And I have to say, the most interesting door that was knocked while I was out was somebody who said, yeah, if I'm going to vote for a Democrat, I'm going to vote for Hillary Clinton. But I also really, really like Ted Cruz and Donald Trump.
Excellent.
Very, very quickly before we go, Martin O'Malley suspending his campaign, failure to launch. Why? In a few words.
Well, I just think he was overshadowed by the enormous fame and experience of Hillary Clinton and the enormous appeal to young voters of Bernie Sanders. He was sort of in the middle of those. He experienced governor. But, he just really couldn't, I think, break through with all of the attention on the other two.
And I think the best way to describe that would be his cover of Taylor Swift on The View.
Mm. Right. Yeah, he may have a future on the concert circuit.
Okay, a few seconds for this.
That's right.
Another exit last night, Republican Mike Huckabee, winner of the 2008 Iowa caucuses. Why didn't he catch fire this time in 20 seconds?
I heard people the first time he came to Iowa in January of last year describe him as, quote, establishment. That tells you where where the Republican Party had moved in 8 years.
The kiss of death, perhaps, for some GOP supporters. Thank you very much. Kay Henderson, news director of Radio Iowa, Kathy Obradovich, political columnist for the Des Moines Register, Clay Masters, our own Clay Masters of Morning Edition, and a reporter.
Thanks, Ben.
Thank you all for giving us your insights. It's been so fascinating. Thank you all. And tomorrow on this program, we'll continue on with Donna Hoffman and Kedron Bardwell, both a political analyst. It's Politics Wednesday tomorrow. Yes, we're going to talk about the caucuses, and we'll talk about pivoting to New Hampshire and the rest of the nation as these candidates go on their journey. River to River is produced by Claire Roth, Emily Woodbury, Lindsay Moon. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.